for the benefit of those with flash photography.
Yo.
What is up? What is up? What is up? Sit down, take a load off. Here we go. Welcome to DreamWork. I am Colin Delaney. In a moment, I'll be joined by my tag team partner, Cheech. And this here is DreamWork. Every week on DreamWork, we talk about tag team wrestling. None of that singles wrestling junk. Get that junk out of my face. We don't talk about no singles wrestling. I'm just kidding. Singles wrestling is also great, but it's not as great as tag team wrestling. And what kind of tag teams do we talk about, you ask? Oh, just the greatest tag teams of all time. And this week, of course, no exception. This week we are talking about Ron Simmons and Hacksaw Butch Reed, the tag team of Doom. And as many people know, just this past week, Hacksaw Butch Reed passed away. But that's not necessarily why we decided to talk about Doom. Doom's actually been on our list of teams to talk about for a couple weeks now. It just felt like a good time to get to it now. It just kind of bumped them up the list a little bit, but not much. And man, what an intimidating force Doom was, and what an incredible talent Hacksaw Butch Reed was. So rest in peace to Hacksaw Butch Reed, and let's get down to it. It's Ron Simmons. It's Butch Reed. It is the team of Doom.
Cheech.
Colin.
Can you believe it's February already?
Bro, you have no idea.
Did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I did.
All right. What'd you think? Did you enjoy it? I know you're a casual-ish sports person.
It was uneventful. I mean, right?
Yeah. Do you know how it ties into today's tag team?
Because this tag team played football as well?
Hacksaw Butch Reed played for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh.
And Ron Simmons played for the Tampa Bay Bandits of the USFL.
Wow, that is a cool tie-in.
So, among other reasons, they are a great team for the post-Super Bowl week.
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely.
I had brought up Doom a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember who we chose instead, but I've been wanting to do Doom for a minute. I don't even know why, honestly.
Well, because they stand out, you know what I mean? Like, they are very much a unique pairing, especially for their time.
Yeah, and especially for, like, that era and WCW, which I didn't, you know, I'm familiar with all the big stuff, but a team like Doom, they are like a little bit in the blinders for me, you know, like I remember them and I've seen them, but I don't like, they're not a team that I can nail down in my brain with memorable things.
Oh man, this hit right in the sweet spot of when I discovered WCW. It was right around 1990.
So for me, yeah, I think I discovered WCW in like 92-ish, 93-ish. So it's like just before. So I know who the players are, and I've seen them since. But at the time, you know, that was not where my knowledge was at.
Oh, the other thing that helped ginormously was this era of home video release was hot at the Captain Video / Video Ranger / Family Video / Home Video. They went through a million different changes, but they had all the WCW pay-per-views from this time. So, oh my gosh, I can remember getting Capital Combat and Future Shock and all those WCW classics from 1990.
Wow, no, I don't think any of my video stores really did. I remember like the Blockbuster near my house had like Great American Bash 96, and that was about as old as WCW as my local video store had.
Nah, bro, I'm talking 90s. I was watching these as they came out. The video store I had got them. It was it changed my fandom. You know what I mean? Like I remember WCW just being that thing I could see if I went to my aunt's house on a Saturday night. It was on. That was the only time. And then suddenly my video store is carrying the whole line. It was life changing for an 8, 9, 10 year old me.
The closest I had was we were on a family vacation down south to, we were going to Florida to visit my grandparents, and we stopped at a hotel in Georgia to stay the night, and WCW was on the TV and it blew my mind. And then the next year I got my tonsils out, and my mom to somehow aid my recovery bought me a pack of WCW trading cards she found, which had Doom cards in it.
Oh, yep. There were definitely those. The other thing that helped my fandom was, we got that, and then there was the Rite Aid got WCW Magazine in the 90s. So I was like, oh, snap.
So we kind of jumped a little bit past, but preliminary thoughts on the tag team known as Doom.
I wouldn't say excited, because like you had said, they've definitely been on the board for a while. So I just almost felt prepared, and it was weird. Like a lot of times I'm excited for the team. This one, I was more excited to study than I was to be like, oh, I can't wait for the matches. I was like, oh no, I want to like examine this.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way. I would describe myself as curious going into this. I know Ron Simmons and I know Butch Reed and I know their work, but I, like I said, I'm not the most familiar with Doom. I can't say that I've really ever done anything like this where I sat down and watched any Doom. I don't think Doom crossed my plate at all in any of the weeks that we watched. I watched, you know, in the matches watched, I watched a lot of teams we've already covered, but I never watched a Doom match, I don't think, up to this point.
Well, here, you cover it when you go into their accomplishments, because, like, they didn't have the longest run. You know what I mean? That's the other thing we had to go up against.
No, which I was not the most aware of, but I guess I am. Once I read it, it made sense. Once I started going through it, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense, because the timeline kind of just fits right there.
Yeah.
But, we can jump right into some championships and accomplishments.
Yeah, go for it, because they had.
So they, honestly, they're only a one-time NWA / WCW tag team champs, because they won them when it was still NWA, and they lost them when it was WCW.
I was going to say, yeah, I watched them a lot of the times. They had the belt on themselves, so they definitely had that. It was a good run, you know what I mean? I thought it was only one. I wondered if it was maybe two, but it was just because I was watching stuff out of order.
Yeah, they are also number 90 on the PWI Top 100, number 46 on the Sports Illustrated Top 50.
Okay.
In 1990, they were second runner-up in the PWI Tag Team of the Year. Steiners won that year.
Yeah, you know.
And PWI also, they were also the runner-up for most improved.
I could see that.
You want to take a stab at who was the most improved wrestler of 1990?
Was it a team or a singles?
It is a singles.
Eric Watts.
Paul Roma. You were close.
Oh, okay.
I'll say that Paul Roma is pretty close to Eric Watts.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, that's it for the championships and accomplishments.
Okay. Not bad.
At least as a team. I mean, if we want to start, like, really getting into it, we all know Ron Simmons is a world champion and then a WWF tag team champ a bajillion times over.
Well, I mean, we'll get into it, but he's also got a lot of other accomplishments that Mr. Jim Ross will tell you about.
Holy crap. There is one of the matches, my notes literally start with WCW lets JR talk way too much about football.
Okay, it must have been the same match I was watching. We can get to it right now. I was just like, oh my God, all he's doing like is just saying stats from people did stuff in college.
Yeah, Doom must have been JR's favorite tag team of all time.
Holy cow, dude. He was literally, it had to be the same match. He was talking about specific games where Ron Simmons did good.
Apparently he was like, yeah, once again, JR loves, you know, because he would always sneak it in WWE, but I feel like WWE kind of capped him and was like, hey, listen, you know, you can mention things, but don't go on whatever's about it. But in WCW, they just let the man run.
He went on such a run. Because, like, okay, you can say a lot of things about Ron Simmons. That's fine. But then he started finding stuff out about, like, Butch Reed. And I'm just like, okay, now you're getting ridiculous.
Right, because when you look into it, Butch Reed had not as important of a football career as Ron Simmons.
Yeah, he was a journeyman. He did like junior college, and yes, JR, JUCO is not a grand thing to obtain. It means junior college. Relax yourself.
Yeah, Ron Simmons though apparently was ninth runner up for the Heisman.
Oh yeah, no, he's like a legitimate legend in like college football. So like that I understand. But then he was like, well, I gotta talk about Butch. It was like, well, Butch went to junior college, and then he went to this college where this other guy went to, so you know, that's a thing. And then of course, you know, he was a journeyman and got his way to the NFL too. So it's like, yeah, that's fine, but I was like, we've covered, that's like half the match we've covered now.
Yeah, Butch Reed actually didn't ever play a down in the NFL. He was signed to the Chiefs, but he never actually played a down for them.
You know what I mean? He could say that. You know, he definitely got that line in eventually somewhere.
But before we get into like the matches, so because we're already talking about it, they're roughly the same age.
Are they now? Interesting.
Yeah, Ron Simmons is like, I think only 3 years younger than Butch Reed.
Okay.
But Ron Simmons did have a little bit of success in football after that, so he kind of went into the football thing in the early to mid 80s, whereas after like 1976, when Butch Reed was a rookie in the NFL and it didn't work out, he went straight to wrestling. So he started wrestling in like 77, whereas Ron Simmons didn't get in until like 87.
Okay, that makes more sense, because that was one of the things I was studying. I was looking for the dynamics, and this was a dynamic I was not quite prepared for. It kind of threw me for a loop, because technically, when you look at the careers, it's like, oh, wow, this is very much an older man basically on his way out with a young kid on his way in.
Yeah, yeah, they're only a couple years apart, but it is that kind of dynamic because Butch Reed had already been around for a decade before Ron Simmons came around. And they are from, like, they're from different eras of wrestling.
And that's the thing, like, let's not just say, like, oh, yeah, Butch Reed wrestled for 10 years, but, like, had a heck of a run. Like, he had a run in Mid-South. He had a run, I think he also had one, like, Florida. But you know what I mean? Like, the fact that he had a, like, complete run as a singles, wrestling, like, Ric Flair for the title and things like that, and being a main eventer on his own way before he ever got into this Doom thing.
Yeah, yeah, no, I found that interesting. And I was trying, like, neither of them was really off for very long before they put the masks on as Doom. But let's get into the what matches we watched first, and then we can dive back in.
Okay, I'll go first because that's usually how we roll. Let's see. The first one I watched was them versus the Fantastics from a Power Hour of 1990. But this was Bobby and Jackie. We didn't have Sweet Tamikaze or anything in there. Then I had them versus the Italian Stallion and the Pro, which was Mike Awesome under a hockey mask from WCW. I think it was a Power Hour from December 1990. Then I watched them versus the Road Warriors on a Power Hour from February 90. Them versus Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert from Clash, the New York Knockouts. Well, I think that was number 10 from 89. I watched them versus Vader and Bam Bam in New Japan. I watched them versus Steiner's Power Hour, a TV one, in January 89. Then Steiner's at Clash in February 90. then Steiner's from Power Hour in March of 90, then Steiner's in April of 90. I went like the whole way. I had to figure out, I had to crack that code. then I went to the Freebirds at Wrestle War, Arn and Flair at Halloween Havoc 90, Steiner's at Capital Combat, Steiner's at Clash 11, and then had to end it with, we haven't been there in a while, but it felt so good. Lex and Sting from Clash 14, 1991.
Man, I also ended with them against Sting and Luger at Clash 14.
Oh, come on, there's no bigger main event than Sting and Lex.
And I almost skipped him over because I had watched the Freebirds match, but I was like, I got time for one more. I'm doing it.
Yeah, bro. Oh, I had to. I knew. I'd go, ooh, wait. I'll end on the Sting and Lex.
So I switched up my format a little bit this week where I decided to start with matches of just them eating jobbers up and then followed it up in, you know, chronological order.
I kind of did the same.
So I started with them against Tommy Angel and Terry Brunson. Followed by them against Alex Porteau and Reno Riggins, a couple of enhancement classics. Followed by them against Paul Drake and William Bell in a ghetto street fight. Then them against Sean Regal and Paul Drake. Then we get into them against the Steiners from Havoc 89. Them against the New Samoans from Starrcade 89. Them against the Steiners from Clash 10, Masks versus Titles. Them against the Rock and Roll Express from Great American Bash 90. Them against Wyndham and Anderson from Havoc 90. Them against Anderson and Wyndham, the Street Fight from Starrcade 90. Them against the Freebirds from Wrestle War 91. And then them against Sting and Luger from Clash 14.
All right. Yeah, they had. Yeah, it was fun.
So this is it's a weird blind spot for the WWE Network, kind of.
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of their stuff was on, like, the syndicated TV shows, which, of course, WWE owns, but, like, we'll never see.
Yeah.
Like, we'll never get Power Hours up on the network, probably.
Yeah, so after I went through some YouTube and watched them beat some job guys up, then I was just like, I'll just go through the clashes and the pay-per-view matches, you know?
That's what I did. I saw a couple things, and then I had to figure out. I didn't know what I was looking for or what I was going to find, but I was like, why did they wrestle the Steiners so much?
Well, right, because that's where Doom came from. Did you do the reading study? Did you see why that was?
No, I didn't. I just saw that was like they just had they wrestled every month almost at every pay-per-view at early 90.
So Doom came around because they were doing some kind of angle where woman under the name Robin something was like acting like a super fan for the Steiners.
Okay.
And accidentally cost the Steiners a match. And so the Steiners like cast her out and she's like, I'll show you guys. I'm coming back and I'm going to bring somebody who's going to take you down. And the team she brought was her team of Doom.
And let's not forget Nitron.
And Nitron, Sabretooth.
Yeah. There to, you know, her own personal bodyguard, despite having two ginormous men there in black masks and black, dope black capes, though. The capes and the hoods were dope.
It's kind of crazy because their size and builds were so similar that when they are in those black masks, I'm not sure I've ever seen a team of humans who were not like actual twins that were more difficult to tell apart.
Really? I could tell them apart and I'll go there. It's because Ron Simmons' backyard, his rear 40, is way bigger than Butch Reed's.
I can when they start wrestling, I can definitely tell who's in the ring and who's wrestling because they do have very different, distinct wrestling styles. But when it's like a wide shot and you just look at the ring, I'm like, holy crap! These two are like, it's like one and they literally are Doom 1 and 2.
Yeah, if you look at them straight on, yes, I could see what you're saying. But yeah, once they get in there and they're moving around, And then, yeah, I one of my notes was Ron Simmons' posture is just intimidating.
Almost everything about them was intimidating. Like, you could tell that Ron Simmons is a bit more intense with just about everything.
Yes.
Butch Reed, but I think that comes a little bit from what I was just saying, how they do come from different eras.
Oh, I know. That's the thing. It took me for a loop a little bit because it took me a while to realize the dynamic. Because in my head, like you said, they're so similar in size and everything. When you look at them, it's very much like Doom 1, Doom 2. But then you're like, oh, no, they wrestle very different.
When they were just beating up jobbers in their like enhancement matches, it looks like almost every move they do could be the end of the match. I was literally every match going, oh, that's probably it. And then like they would pick the guy up and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to give him more moves.
Yeah. That was the other thing. I was surprised with because I thought, okay, they're big guys. They've all probably got, you know, 2-3 moves every now and then they busted out random stuff. And I was like, wow, look at that.
I watched both men throw a drop kick and I was like, what? I've never seen Braun Simmons throw a drop kick. I don't think ever.
Oh yeah, he did. I saw Scott Steiner do one. It looked odd, but it was really crisp too. But yeah, they did odd ones like Butch Reed randomly did a bulldog. I go, I don't think I've ever seen him do a bulldog, but I go, okay, he's got, you know what I mean? He was feeling frisky that night. That's fine.
They would randomly both throw a pile driver. It was like both of them would be like, what do I do now? I'm just gonna throw a pile driver.
Yeah, it was just like a forearm.
yeah. But yeah, you could tell that Butch Reed was from an era where they weren't, they were a little nicer with things. It was more of a work era, you know?
Okay. I don't know because we all watch the shoot interviews and I've watched a bajillion of them. I was in my notes I wanted to put Butch Reed is like the king of like the 2-inch punch. Like, you know, they teach you that, like that ninja gimmick where, you know, real close distance. But, like, according to, like, Terry Taylor, like, oh, yeah, Butch Reed's kicks look like they couldn't crack an egg, but they hurt like the Dickens. And I was like, do they really, Terry? Do they really? I'm sure they stung. But, like, once again, like, his strikes all were real close range, short little poppies.
Oh, yeah. No, in the Flair and Anderson match, Ric Flair is just absorbing Butch Reed punches. But you can tell, even though there's not much wind-up or follow-through, he's dinging him a little bit.
I know. That's the thing. In my head, I'm like, I don't know if he's like being nice by going, oh, no, I'm only going 2 inches because if I wind up, I may kill you.
Yeah. The Flair and Anderson match is a lot of fun. But, like, right off the bat, so here's where I got a little confused about this. So we, you know, I started with them beating up jobbers, which was great. By the way, I love big dudes throwing around enhancement talent. I'll never not love it ever in my life.
Especially these two, because they could throw people around.
But then we get into, they have that match with the Steiners at Halloween Havoc 89, and that's really where they first that's their first run-in with the Steiners. But then we go to Starrcade 89, where they do that, like, round-robin gimmick with the Road Warriors, the Samoans, and the Steiners, and Doom doesn't win a goddamn match.
Okay, did you watch those?
I watched the Samoans one.
Okay, because as a man who rented that video, I knew, and I also remember, it was a really cool concept, but you can't have, like, 14 matches on a pay-per-view. All the matches were, like, 5 minutes. So I was like, oh, I remember this wasn't even that good, so I didn't even watch it. And, oh, yeah, as soon as you said I had that flashback. I was like, oh, yeah, Doom got no points.
Yeah, Doom gets no points. And that's early on in Doom. You have these two gigantic dudes who are very intimidating and who you could potentially be pushing. But right off the shoot, you just are like, yeah, no, don't get no wins here.
That's the problem when you book a tournament with going, oh, wait, not everybody can't lose.
But it was the Steiners, the Road Warriors, and the Samoans. So it's like, man.
Exactly.
And that's like what the tag division was early on when Doom came around. So like I was jarred a little bit from going from job matches to these matches where they're getting tossed around.
Oh yeah, they definitely get tossed around. And why do you think that is?
I don't know, cuz they're wrestling the Steiners.
Okay, I get. Yeah, I guess. But even other teams they wrestle, they literally take, like, the first thing they do is take moves.
No, that's true. Even against the Rock and Roll Express, they, like, Butch Reed takes a body slam and a running elbow from Robert Gibson is, like, bump and feeding a minute into the match.
Yeah, and anytime they wrestle the Steiners, the first thing that happens is Scott or somebody will do a duck behind and give Ron a German on his head, but he took him like a champ. You knew he had no problem because it was literally the first move every match.
Holy crap, though. They're some of the most violent Germans you'll ever see.
But, like, as a big man who's, like, in their prime, like, okay, for example, I distinctly remember trying to explain that bump to Brody Lee. And, like, as he figured it out, it was like, see, if you kind of go with it, it's not so terrible.
Well, right. Both of them. I mean, it wasn't just Ron. Butch Reed was taking them, too.
I know, but, like, Ron, there was literally, I watched, like, a run where literally the first move was German on his dome. And like, he would feed right up, and they'd keep right on going. It was usually that, right into, like, a dropkick or something, and more moves. And I was just like, holy cow. But I was like, all right, he's an athletic freak in his prime. Like, it's the first move of the match. I guess it makes sense that he's not dead.
True. But, you know, you always hear these things from, like, old timers and whatnot. Like, oh, you're so big. You got to protect yourself. And then you watch 1989, two gigantic men just getting dunked on their heads for fun.
Now, okay, which brought me to, I don't know why, it's just broad assumptions that I have no rhyme or reason, and they're just theories, and if I was ever proved wrong, I'll go, okay, not a problem. But, like it was bugging me. I was like, why are two ginormous black guys, which is, you know what I mean? Like, let's get to that. They were probably, like, the prototype. Sure, there were other, like, probably two black guys teamed together that were big, but these guys were, like, brick shit houses. You know what I mean? Like, it was like they were basically almost like the Black Road Warriors, like physique-wise. So it was like, why were they not treated like the Black Road Warriors and no selling and this and that? Part of me is like, is it because they were black guys in the 80s? And it was like, oh, no, you know what I mean? It probably wouldn't be easy to stand up to things. Or the other thought I had was, is the big man not bumping a New York Northern WWE thing?
Yeah, I honestly could see it going either way. I get what you're saying because that's kind of what I'm getting at too. I don't know what it was, but they were bump machines. They were getting tossed around, but you would think that two guys that size in that era should not be just getting hurled around like that.
Wow, okay. I just thought about this because I was wrong. A team that definitely preceded them would be Soul Man Rocky Johnson and Atlas. Yeah. You know what I mean? Ginormous, same thing, but works towards my argument. What were they in New York? They were world champions right away, and they were pushed more athletically, so it was a little more acceptable, and they were baby faces to be bumping. But you know what I mean? In my head, if I think if Doom is in WWF, they're not bumping. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was surprised that they were bumping as much as they were. But then part of me also thought they come in against the Steiners. They move right into that thing where they're wrestling the Steiners, the Samoans, the Road Warriors. Like, these are the teams they're wrestling outside of, like, TV enhancement matches. And so part of me just thought, well, they were wrestling other teams who were also big. And so they just started taking bumps, and then from there, like, you can't just go back on it and be like, yeah, no, Arn Anderson, you ain't bumping me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I guess that was the thing. They're very much a product of their time, and at their time was a lot of big men. So, yeah, I guess they just wrestled. So, yeah, I guess when everybody's 280, you could all wrestle like you're 220.
Right. I mean, honestly, the big matches they were having on TV and on pay-per-views were against the Steiners or the Road Warriors or the Samoans, and it's like, oh, them are all big dudes.
Which I would like to bring this up. This was something I noticed in my studies because I did a little bit like you. I was watching like TV stuff early on, then beating up guys, yada, yada, and Power Hour stuff. And then I was watching and I was like, okay, Butch is all right, and that's where I did like the math. I was like, oh, he's kind of in the twilight of his career, yada yada yada. Butch was very much a man who on pay-per-view came alive.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. But even in those job matches and the enhancement, he'll stay in there forever. He'll just, at times, I'm like, I don't even know if he knows what to do next. He's just kind of still in there.
That's the thing. That's where you could see he's very much just an old school worker of like, he can go in there and just do nothing for 10 minutes and still wrestle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And plus, we'll also get to this. They were also big fans of the stall tactic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not so much with women, but once Teddy Long came into the picture, there was a lot of take moves, let's go outside and have a conference for a while. And I don't understand, why are conferences not subject to a 10 count?
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it, especially when it's with, like, the Steiners and they're trying to get, like, a longer match out of it. I was like, oh, yeah, that is smart. You get in there, you get tossed around, you reset. Then you can come in and you can lock up again and you can let them kind of shine up a little bit and then, you know, do whatever you want. It just kind of adds another little wrinkle to the front.
Oh, it definitely did. And you automatically knew when that happened. I go, oh, let me look. Oh, this match is going over 15. Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sure. One thing I noticed when Doom was in control, does anyone have a more confident, cool tag than Doom?
Oh, why would they not be confident 24/7?
Like, when they were in control, you know, like, they go over and it's like, you want to tag me? Yeah, I want to tag you. Give me that hand. Bang! Give me that tag. It's like, yeah! Hell yeah!
Oh, yes. They were very manly tags.
I had to write it. I was like, I don't even know what I'm writing, but, like, it's like a forceful, like, meaningful, like, cool tag.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Never seen a tag quite like it.
Yes. Okay, yeah, that was in my notes. I'm looking at my notes, I go, oh, yeah, is bumping big guy a New York trope? Okay, here was a question that I definitely had. Did Doom solely unmask just so JR could say football stats?
I don't know, but I love the thought of it.
You know what I mean? Like, in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, it's weird that they have the masks. I get that they have the masks. Okay. They take off the masks. I was like, there's really no super duper reason, and then literally afterwards it's just JR's orgasmic with stats.
Yeah, I wrote WCW really let JR talk about football all he wants.
Okay, here's a JR line that, whoo, it caught me. Okay, one of the job matches, you didn't watch it, you missed out. The match was them versus the Italian Stallion and the Pro, which, like I said, was Mike Awesome. Literally just, he literally looked like Lord Humongous. It was just the, you know, the hockey mask and then, you know, black trunks. And I don't know why, and I'm not even sure if it's I don't know if it's 100% shoot, but they mug him for like 70% of the match, when like extracurricular mugging. Like eventually they pin him 1-2, and then Ron gives him like an extra headbutt to the nose. But I'm like, I think they just beat on him because they figured he had a mask or something. But the JR line that struck me was, they go, boy, they're throwing that boy around like he's a junior heavyweight. He's 280 pounds. And I was like, yo, Mike Awesome never got any credit. His entire career, people kept comparing him to cruiserweights.
Even
when he was a job guy getting beat up, they're like, boy, he's getting thrown around like a little guy. Who knew 8 years later he'd be jumping off the top rope, ECW champ, they'd be like, he flies like a cruiserweight. He's just like a junior heavyweight. I'd go, nobody gives him credit for his size.
It was the knock on him back in the day, and he turned that knock on him into like what made him great and what people loved about him.
But it's true. They were definitely throwing him around. They were mugging him.
JR at one point also told me that Ron Simmons was the Sports Illustrated Defensive Lineman of the Year.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Listen, at times I find, because I'm a football fan, so I find a little bit of the football info interesting, but man, does he hammer it.
Oh, boy, does he ever.
I think it was the Ric Flair Arn Anderson match where he was just in his glory about it. Because, you know, in a match like that where, you know, Flair and Anderson are kind of taking their time a little bit and, like, you know, kind of just working, JR's got to just do his own dirty work there.
Now, a fun kind of sports analogy that you'll get because you're a sports fan, that I kind of framed Doom in with because, JR was making all those. Her career, while short, was exactly what it should have been. Like, I don't think they were that team that should have stayed together for 10 years and gotten old together and, you know, were that type of tag team. I kind of, to me, they were that young, super athletic, supernovas. Like, okay, one sports analogy would be like, you know, like the guy who comes into UFC, nobody knows him and he wins 10 straight because nobody quite knows him yet. I was comparing him more to like that supernova, like football team or basketball team that like is super young, super explosive, but, you know, definitely had they gone longer would have had like the sophomore jinx by like the third year, you know, the league would have figured him out type of thing.
They are the Wildcat offense?
Yeah, something like that. Exactly, exactly. You know what I mean? For their era, because you know what I mean? No one ever had seen anything quite like them before. They were explosive as hell. You know what I mean? They were as athletic as anybody else, and there was two of them. You know what I mean? So it was one of those things where I was like, I kind of like their career as being like, you know, or like that football team that makes it like far in the playoffs for like three straight years, and then it kind of falls off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can, I get that. I don't know though. I don't know if I'm totally on board with that, because I definitely could have seen Doom just rolling together.
Well, yes, if they would have stayed, but that's only if they're getting like a push the whole time. You know what I mean? I don't think they're that type of team that can necessarily like gracefully go down the card.
Yeah, I don't know, but like we were talking before, like they started hot with the Steiners, had to cheat to beat the Steiners, but then after that they lost a bunch. They were just on these pay-per-views, they were just losing, and then they started coming back up, and then they were champs, and then they were winning a bunch, and then they lost the titles, and then they Butch Reed turned on Ron Simmons.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I argue with them turning then, but I am saying that I definitely could have seen them staying together and running, you know, running it back and trying to get them back, or even, you know, shuffling back through the card and working their way back up through.
Oh, they definitely could. I could see them getting a couple, maybe a year or two out of it, maybe more. But which brings me to a point that I wanted to get to, because obviously one of the best matches is the Arn and Flair one. I didn't watch the street fight because I was like, street fight. I wanted to watch the match. And I thought that one was really good because Arn and Flair are in their glory just shining them, because it's a weird kind of reversal of fortunes.
Yes.
But what I noticed, and I want to see if you noticed, do you think the fix was in and they were already like, hey, we want Ron Simmons to be like world champ in like a year or so or two? You know what I mean?
Yes, I was going to point that out. You could definitely tell, especially once the masks are off and they start working, that even if it's not the plan, or even if like there isn't the fix isn't in, Ron Simmons outshines just on his own, just in his own being.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Because like we had said earlier, it, especially when it comes to the physicality of things, it was, once again, you know, the older guy and the younger guy. Because, yeah, Ron Simmons was definitely on the come up.
Yeah, and he's just so intense. Like, everything he does, you're like, holy crap. That spine buster, the Ron Simmons spine buster we grew up with, the 1989-1990 version, is so much nastier.
Oh, it's always been scary. It'll be scary. He could hit one now and it'd be scary.
But man, like one of those job matches, he finishes with it, and I say, go ahead, Ron.
Oh, definitely. Okay. So, which brings me to, and I'm surprised you didn't get to it, because I ended up having to pull a little bit of a Colin. I wanted to see their. I went and looked up their cage match, and I saw, I believe, their last match together is in New Japan versus Vader and Bam Bam. So I watched that first night as my main event of my first night of viewings. And that's where I kind of got a little bit of an inkling into the dynamic. Because it's odd because it's in Japan. And like Ron gets in the ring. Simmons grabs the mic and is like, blah, 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 I'm excited if my partner's up for it. And I was like, wow, that was kind of some shade he threw at Butch. And then, yes, Butch is very much out of his element. But, like, you could see Rod's almost, like, prodding him, like, Ron wants to go 100 miles an hour, and Butch, once, like we said, is from a different era and still is in Japan doing like the chin locks and the chokes, like it's territory style, and it doesn't go so well. So I did see that one, but that's where I very much got the, oh, okay, this is an older guy and a young guy team. And yeah, Ron's just rearing to go, and Butch is a little bit still got the reins on, still doing a little more 80s style, where Ron wants to go 90s style, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I saw that that was their last match together, and I was like, I bet you I can't find that. There's no way that's just out there somewhere that I can find. So I didn't even look for it. But that's technically after Butch already turned on Ron. It's a random comeback together.
That's cool. Yeah, that was good stuff that you could do that back in, you know, I think that was, what, 1990?
91.
Oh, yeah, it was 91. Yeah, they went all the way to 91, but that was – oh, it didn't have the date, but yeah. But I knew it was – I checked because I was like, I know a lot of Vader and Bam Bam's run together is kind of heralded online. So I was like, maybe they haven't. Yeah, it didn't take that long to find.
One of my favorite parts about this week's team was late 80s, early 90s WCW sets. They were unmatched.
Okay, I gotta find it. Which one it was?
So Starrcade 89 is an all-timer. It looks like something out of American Gladiators. We've talked about it before because I think I watched Steiner's Samoans when we were doing Steiner's. It's an all-timer. And then you didn't watch Starrcade 90, but Starrcade 90 with the street fight with Arn and Wyndham is super dope.
The one that got me was the Clash 10, the New York Knockout, because Woman gets a big entrance with Nitron, and then they come out in the hoods and everything. I kid you not, I go, wow, this gives me NXT vibes.
Yeah, I don't know. And the Flair and Anderson one with just the big block WCW letters that they're walking up the ramp on. I love those old sets.
Yeah, I don't know why I was watching it. I go, wow, this gives me NXT vibes. And then I was like, is NXT kind of weirdly is a WCW, like, bastard son? Because they took all the pay-per-view names, kind of, and things. And I was like, it's weird. But yeah, I was like, even the production side gave me those vibes. I was like, that's weird.
Oh, here's something I noticed that I meant to bring up already. Did you notice that they seem to be heel or face, depending on who they're wrestling?
Yes, it is weird because that's the thing. They're still new on the block, so it's like, okay, whoever we're wrestling is way more established. So, yeah, it's kind of whatever their opponents are.
It was wacky because I was like, I feel like I'm missing something, but I don't think I am, honestly, because it was like, okay, here's them against the Rock and Roll Express, and they're definitely heels. And then, oh, here's them against Flair and Anderson just a couple months later. They're definitely baby faces. And it's like, man. And then against the Freebirds, I think Jim Ross even mentions, like, neither team really fan favorites.
Yeah, no, that was WCW at that time. But that was the thing. Once again, they were still new, so it's like, really, you're going to tell Arn and Flair, like, no, we're obviously bad guys, so you need to be good guys. And it's like, no, it doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, I just found it so interesting that, like, a big team like that wouldn't have their own presence, wouldn't be allowed, even though they were the new team, wouldn't be, like, the thing that they go to. Because I'd be like, oh, they're I'll be whatever. They're clearly gigantic murder humans.
And they've also – and especially by the time they got to Teddy being their manager, you're like, okay, this is a heel unit.
Yeah, but they would still be babyface sometimes, like, depending on who they're against.
No, I know, which I think kind of took away from it a little bit, because I think, once again, they were another I preferred them with Teddy because I think it was a better silhouette, you know what I mean?
Yes. Oh, my God, yeah, for sure.
So I thought once they got that, and, you know, Teddy was, once again, new to the manager game, so he was feeling frisky. He was doing cool stuff. He had that weird boxing glove on for a little bit, like – they made fun of his peanut head. They were chanting. I was like, he was getting over it too. So it just worked, but like in a different dynamic. You know what I mean? Like we both would have thought like, oh, okay, they got the heel manager. They don't bump, yada, yada, yada. But I was like, no, they were, you know what I mean? Ron was young and feisty. And then Butch just came from that era where he was a worker, not a giant amongst men. So they were able to have much more competitive matches. Now, a funny wrinkle that I did not suspect, but I noticed, and maybe you'll agree, I don't know if you saw enough matches, the Steiners got better for working Doom, but like not in the way you think. It was still early, like in the Steiner run, so like they just needed ring time, but like you could tell Scott himself gets way better. Like in the first early matches, he's almost like hidden, and it's very much like a Doom kind of match. And then by the end, there's one match where Scott does like a 5-6 minute open. Like Rick's just like, nah, stay in there, keep doing things. And he just has a long open with everybody. It's also, I think, the match where he starts with the reverse slam. You know what I'm talking about, right?
No.
Oh, the man, the pudgy plex, the backflip fall away slam.
Oh yeah. The car bomb.
Yeah. He literally starts the match with they circle. Car bombs one, the other one feeds in, car bombs the other, they powder and they conference with Teddy.
Yeah, I've seen him do that open with Sid and Spivey.
Oh, yeah. He just dumps himself on his head. But this is a little easier because these guys are actually a little smaller than the skyscrapers. But, yeah, starts with that and then literally just stays in there for another, like, 3 to 4 minutes of just throwing guys around and just shining. And, obviously, Doom loves it. Like, one of the matches, I was like, wow, Doom literally all they're doing is just setting up the Steiners. But it was fun in how it evolved. You know what I mean? Like, early on, it was very by the books. And then slowly, oddly, the Steiners just needed more ring time. And then Scotty was just getting better, and they were just gelling, and they got good at working big guys and getting over with the crowd quick with big guys as opposed to, like, you know, just squashing little dudes because they were baby faces, you know what I mean? So it was a little different for them. So I was just like, wow, isn't that weird that the Steiners, I feel, oddly got better by working Doom because they got to work a heel unit that were big. They just got to explore things that you wouldn't normally have if they were just working like the Freebirds per se. It'd be similar, but not the same dynamic.
So I watched this first Steiners match because I was like, oh, I gotta watch that. That's basically their big debut. And then I watched the Clash match because that's where they lose their masks. And then I saw like 8 more Steiners match, but I was like, I can't just keep watching the Steiners.
Yeah, no, there were a ton of them, but that's the thing. I watched it because I was just like, why? Why was this pairing?
No, it's interesting, and yeah, it's kind of crazy to think that that's like early Steiners. You know, the Steiners are only like I think Jim Ross mentions in one of them, he's like, yeah, Rick Steiner 4 years in, Scotty only 3, and I'm like, holy smokes.
Yeah, that's the thing, because the Steiners are such an institution of WWE tag teams, you think, but I was like, oh no, like, yes, Doom are the new kids on the block, but like, the Steiners hadn't been there very long.
Yeah, but you have to remember, you keep referencing Ron Simmons as this young upstart, but he really isn't that much younger than Butch Reed. In wrestling years, he's young, though. He's like 2 years in.
He's like a Goldberg guy. He got in later because he had football.
Yeah. So, like, when Doom comes around, he's, like, 2 years in, and Butch Reed's, like, 12 years in or 11 years in.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why it is also cool, and, like, that's what I could just tell by watching. I was like, oh, you could see, like, Ron just feels a little stifled, where he, like, really wants to bust out, because, you know what I mean? This whole wrestling thing's new to him.
And one more wrinkle I'll throw in there, for the Sting Luger match. Lex Luger and Ron Simmons played on the same USFL team in 1984, the Tampa Bay Bandits.
Now, I wonder if they were like, that guy's always been a dick or something.
From what it looked like, that's probably the case, because Luger got like kicked out of college and then like kicked off an NFL team and like went to the USFL, and he was only on that team for like a year.
Okay. Now, counter, the camaraderie or the camaraderie I felt in the Arn and Flair match, there's a segment where it's Arn and Butch, and I was like, oh, wait, they know each other. Like, they've wrestled, like, long main events together before, like, way back in the day in Louisiana. And, like, they get in there, and they have a whole segment together, and I go, oh, it's so nice and smooth and everything. I go, oh, it's so cool just seeing, like, oh, these guys work together. It's probably been a bunch of years, but, like, as you're watching all these matches, you know, Butch didn't always have the smoothest run with guys, but ultimately he was in there with Flair, and it was just like, oh, old hat. They've wrestled before. They got in there. It was good stuff.
Yeah, there's a. I was going through just random matches, trying to find more Doom matches, and right around the time where Flair and Anderson wrestled them, I think like later that end of the year, there is a Ric Flair Butch Reed clash main event.
Yes, in between. Yeah, in between their tag match, their big tag matches at either clashes or pay per views. There's another singles one. Yep.
If I had time, I did want to watch the Doom blow off of Ron Simmons and Butch Reed in a cage.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Also, from worth noting on their Wikipedia, which I did not remember, they are both present at Teddy Long's bachelor party on SmackDown.
Oh, they're damn right they should be.
Yeah, of course they should be. I was like, oh, I don't necessarily remember that segment, but now I kind of want to go back and find it just so I can see Doom hanging out together in like the 2000s.
Oh, I'm sure they're a real tight because that was like Teddy's first big team. So, you know what I mean? There's always, I'm sure for managers, they're like, oh, that was my first team. There's always the first team. You know what I mean? With a twinkle in his eye, he always thinks about Doom.
Yeah, I guess Butch Reed was at the bachelor party segment, and he was also at the Teddy Hart wedding segment on SmackDown.
Yeah, because I bet you they're probably shoot friends from back then. Because that was back in the day where like managers were like shoot managers, like handled like got your hotel room and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's get down to the brass tacks here. What made the team of Doom so great?
Okay, it's from this. It's from kind of an apt comparison because most people, I was wondering why are they keep facing the Steiners, and in my head. I remember Arn on a shoot interview putting over the Steiners to the moon about how athletic they were. And a little bit later, they're like, oh, what was it like wrestling Ron Simmons? He goes, he's like a Steiner. And I was like, okay, so that's the matchup. Is that what it is that they're like, yo, let's just see these four freaks go at it. So if you're even put in the conversation that you can go toe-to-toe with the Steiners, an all-time great team, you're obviously a great team. But what I took from the comparison wasn't so much in-ring. It was the silhouettes. It was the, oh, you see Doom, two giant jacked up black guys, walk out with Teddy Long, talking all this smack. You're like, I get it. Then they get in the ring and they beat you up. One trip of theirs, they were always going to beat you up around the ring because that's how they did. They beat everybody's butt. And then when you just, it all just made sense. It was very much like the Steiners, but not in a work rate. And just the, oh yeah, this makes sense. And like I said, they felt like one of those supernova young sports teams that you know, go deep in the playoffs for like 3 years and then kind of burn out quick.
So I think you're right. I think that one of the main things that makes them great is just looking at them, the optics of it. And then what also makes them great is something that we've discussed a bunch of times with a bunch of different teams. While that silhouette was so cool, what made them a great team is the fact that they're so similar but have very distinct differences, you know, that make the team work together.
Exactly, yes.
And, Ron Simmons was around a little bit before Doom got together, just kind of doing a little of whatever. But this really launched Ron Simmons, like, you know, how many times have you seen that clip where that kid jumps up when Ron Simmons hits that power slam and wins the world title? I'm not sure any of that happens without Doom.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I said. You can see that, like, there's a point, obviously, when the masks come off and towards the end of their run, you're just like, oh, they're seeing dollar signs in Ron Simmons.
Yeah. As they should. But yeah, I'm not sure Ron Simmons. I'm not sure we get that moment without Butch Reed and without Doom.
Oh, absolutely. That's the thing. It was good for Ron because while he wanted to go a million miles an hour, it was good for him to learn from Butch the work, you know what I mean, work rate style, to be a wrestler first. And then, yes, you are a genetic freak and your spine busters and power slams will speak for themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Now this one's going to get a little tricky. How would we defeat the team of Doom?
Oh, I got it, bro. We got to come hot and fast. Like we said, we know they like to conference, and we know they're apt to taking moves early. So we just got to blitz them and try and beat them within 5 minutes. I think that's our best bet. And then if it starts getting deep past 10 minutes, then we literally just have to dive on them whenever they're out of the ring. Otherwise, they're going to talk to Teddy and come up with something, and they're going to slam us in a way that's not conducive to our spines.
Yeah, so the first answer that comes to mind is we wouldn't, because they're gigantic and they're freakishly athletic.
Pish tosh, they're susceptible.
But then I started thinking more about it. I'm pretty sure I saw them lose more than I saw them win.
I guess.
Which makes me believe that they are definitely beatable, and not even by necessarily like nefarious tactics. I think it was more just like, honestly, if you can get their shoulders down to the mat, like, I'm pretty sure I can roll them up in a way where their shoulders are incapable of leaving the mat because of their build.
Yeah, they're just too big. They'll get stuck.
So that's my plan. I'm just going to figure out a roll up where they would literally get stuck.
We beat him via stuck.
Yeah. Via lats too big, couldn't get them off the mat.
Yeah, that works. That's the thing. I know they're big and ginormous, but that just means they're more susceptible. The bigger they are, the harder they fall.
And that was doom. Did I ever tell you the story of the first time I met Ron Simmons?
No.
So I did when I got to WWE, I had that first match with Shelton, and they brought me to TV the next week. And they brought me to Raw for some reason. No idea why. Didn't do anything. But I'm walking down the hall, and Ron Simmons is there. Well, I didn't meet Ron last week, so I went over to introduce myself. I shook his hand. I said, "Hey, I'm Colin Delaney. It's good to meet you." He pulled me in for a big hug and then, like, gave me one of those while we're hugging, but pulls his head out to look me straight in the eyes. And he was like, "Man, it's good to meet you." And I was just like, "You too, man." I don't know. Like, it was the scariest hug I've ever received.
Do you feel he just has to do that because he assumes everyone's scared to death of him?
Maybe. I was. I wouldn't have been if he didn't pull me in for a real tight hug. And I was like, oh my God. Hey, man. Heck, it's great to meet you, too.
He just knows he scared the life out of you and was like, damn.
Oh, yeah. Wow. We got through this whole thing without one damn.
This wasn't the damn era. This was not the damn era. This wasn't APA era. This wasn't that. This was doom.
I know. It's crazy. So, crazy thing about this, we just got through doom. We have not yet repeated a human being.
I know. It's going to get tough.
Yeah. Oh my God, it is. It already does. It already gets a little tough, but not that tough yet.
Not that tough yet, but yeah, sometimes I'll think and I'll be like, oh wait, we did them with that guy already.
Yeah, we have not repeated an individual yet, and we're almost 40 episodes deep, so I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, but I guess, eventually we will, but I mean, for now, I guess it takes APA off for a little while.
Right, that's why I mentioned it, because we did Doom, so APA kind of is not on the list. But yeah, like, Billy Gunn's got 75 other tag teams that we could do, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them out there. But I kind of always, once we do a team with somebody in it, all the other teams that they were in get shuffled to the bottom of the deck.
I know. You know which one? Okay, you know which one keeps getting me that I want to pick, but there would be a repeat? I always keep thinking, and then I switch it. Well, maybe I don't say it because we could still use it. But, oh, okay, I'll tease it. The one team I was always thinking was doing Regal and Bobby Eaton, the first Blue Bloods.
Oh, okay, right.
But then I was like, oh, wait, we did Bobby Eaton already. I was like, oh, okay, maybe not. All right, then. I was like, but yeah, we'll get to it eventually. But that was a fun team because that was also a fun era in WCW.
So we would probably do Regal and Taylor first because we've already done Eaton and we shuffle them back.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another one I've also been holding on to, too.
All right. Well, another one in the books. And yeah, I don't know. We just discussed some teams that were shuffling back to the bottom of the deck. But the deck is still full. There's still so many tag teams in the history of wrestling.
Oh, I know. There were we're almost at a year. I remember at a couple months in, I was like, wow, I don't know if there's enough tag teams. And I was like, oh, there's enough tag teams.
At this point, we're going to have to save Sting and Luger for like a special episode.
Oh, don't even. The world's not ready.
I think at this point, we can almost not even watch more matches and just go back and read our old notes, because we've seen like 15 Sting and Luger matches over the course of this exercise.
I know. They're so good.
They are so good, for the record. So good. And that reaches our quota for Sting and Luger for this episode. So, yeah. Follow us on Twitter at DreamWorkPod. Hit us up with suggestions, thoughts, comments, what you liked, what you didn't like, so we can, probably keep doing the same thing even if you don't like it. And we'll talk to you guys next week with a brand new team.
Adios.